I like to say I interned initially with a funeral home briefly for a little le on less than a year. And then after I was finished there, I moved to where I am now. So I've been with this funeral home for a little over a year now. So about 2 years working as a good old apprentice. I'm 38 years old, so I'm a little bit older than the usual apprentices, but
It's not that crazy at all. I mean, when I was in mortuary school, it was a wide variety of ages for everyone there. So you had people that were barely out of high school, and then all the way up, you people in their late 40s and stuff. It's amazing how mortuary school is like. Is that how it is for your school now?
Oh yeah, definitely. I'd say when I was, you always have to take that apprentice like class just to get your foot in the door. And everyone has a different experience with that, but I know mine was especially interesting too, at least to me, because it like just like you said, there was some guys in the back that had been working at a funeral home just sort of like driving for them and stuff like that. And but then we're like, oh well, I guess I better get my apprentice license because I gotta do other stuff there, So there's like these guys that are pushing like 56 that are still and not there's funeral directors that are that old, but just to see people that are just getting into it that are doing that, it was just kind of
They're
just something
having
else.
their careers are going out with a bang. Is what you
Exactly.
could say.
Yeah.
They're
And
having the
then
most challenging career at the end.
right, but then at the same time, like there's some girl sitting next to me and I have like a backpack or something, then I'm kind of got a little Arrested Development going on because it's got some sort of like comic thing I'm really into or whatever. And she's like, I like your pen. And you just kind of have that moment because you're sitting there like, yeah, I'm 38. It's like that never been kissed kind of thing going on. And
Oh no.
just weird. But no, it's good. I feel like I come in with a little bit of wisdom from a customer service and things like that, like stuff you just feel like you can't really learn unless you get down in the grid a little bit. So then coming into this and always being fascinated and interested in that sort of stuff, and then just kind of works out, I guess.
Yeah,
So
so is that how you got into the field in the first place? Was it some you had that inkling, that interest before?
I'd say I was always interested in it,
So you're a
but
weirdo just like all of us.
for sure it was definitely, yeah, I wish I, I wish I could say it was something like a little more the gentle
Poignant.
hearted sort of, yeah, there you go, poignant and gentle hearted. And I mean, but I,
Sure.
right before I came across it, I was working at a treatment center for, so with the elderly community, things like that, but I
Oh.
was working in the kitchen. So, because I had
Okay.
come from other, like I said, food service and things like that, and restaurant, managed a hotel stuff. So
Yeah.
I got into that, and I actually just stumbled across an opportunity. Somebody was looking for that first funeral home I mentioned. We're looking for someone to kind of start interning and helping out with
Sure.
things like that. I use the word interning, but to be a little more, I just use some lingo I don't have to say whether, like they were just kind of looking for somebody to help out. And then I
Yeah.
was like, wow, I've always been curious about that. So I started talking to the gal that posted it, and they kind of just went from there. And I got my foot in the door. I took the class, and before you knew it was like, well, here we go. Something I didn't think I'd ever get a chance to do.
You're rocking and rolling then. How do you think that your first line of your career made an impact being in service? I feel like there's a lot of funeral directors that come from that route, whether it's a hotel or restaurant, things like that. There's some interesting and weird correlations that happen, and
Really?
I think everyone feels that a lot of times, that you're sometimes a waiter or a waitress, or
Yeah.
your hotel concierge some days on the phone, you know.
Yeah, oh, for sure. Well, first of all, I'd like to meet more people like that. I feel like this experience, unfortunately, when I'm stuck in school, and like I said, I have a family, and I'm doing school online, should I say, and working full time, because I do work full time as, with this funeral home. I don't feel like I get to meet a lot of people that share with me their prior experiences, like the guy that I refer to as my mentor, and then my current boss now that is kind of like my current walking mentor, if you will. she was formerly in like healthcare. So I feel like I hear that a lot, like a lot of people that used to work in healthcare.
Definitely.
So the hospitality thing, not to go off on a tangent there, that's interesting. No. But I'd say it's definitely customer service, because it just comes with being able to know that sometimes people are going to have really extreme reactions to things.
Yes.
And some that and it makes sense to you. And then other times people, and I don't know if you agree, but sometimes it's actually more off-putting when they don't have the same reaction that you expect. And then you got to kind of work around it. And I feel like it's a lot of times hospitality in that industry kind of trains you to just realize like everyone is going to handle gains and losses and confusion and frustration differently. So yeah,
that's so very true. And I think that makes you just well equipped to handling that, because I'm sure you've come through a lot of things or complaints or even on the positive side of things too. So you have to be able to handle that and be able to adapt at a moment's notice at any time. So I think hospitality overlaps a ton in that aspect too, and makes you a little bit more prepared, especially from a service standpoint.
Yeah. Adapting is a really good way of putting it, for sure. Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, I like, you know, I mean, the outfits are kind of similar if you work in a banquet, right? You know, like if you worked a banquet or two, you got the white shirt and the black pants, like the, you know, service time. So for sure. Yeah,
exactly. You have that classic funeral director outfit, and then that can apply to so many places in your life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah, you'll never have to have an outfit for a funeral or a luncheon or probably a wedding again, being a funeral director.
Yeah, well, you know, nowadays, I don't think we get to the luncheons. I feel like you're kind of just passing the family off into the luncheon now. You know, once in a while they're downstairs, but that's usually a little different. So,
sure, absolutely. What do you think your favorite part about being in funeral services at the moment for you?
I really enjoy, and it's funny you asked me that. I feel like I've been asked that here and there. As you get more and more into it, people always want to know, like, what keeps you going?
Right, because you need something to keep you going.
Sure, and it's definitely making those human connections, but in my own, I guess, in my own personal introspective way, I really enjoy going out and meeting other people that are in the industry.
Yeah.
Just because, again, being new to this, but being a little bit older, I really enjoy, like, kind of just understanding what makes people tick and mm-hmm. what kind of experience that they've gained so far in this, because it means a lot to me to know what the old schoolers do, which is, you know, that's not always the best way of doing things as we progress into the future, just like we learn about everything else. But at the same time, it's also important to me, just because there is so many things that I just, you know, you have to remember that we don't always take with us in modern days. So
and it got us to where we are too.
Right.
And sometimes that goes too far. People thinking that, you know, we got here because of what we did, but it's like, that doesn't mean we can't keep pushing forward and try to progress with the times and to help more families. But I think there's a lot of power in learning from people that have been doing it for a long time, because they do have a lot of things down, meeting with families and a lot of things that you see behind the scenes in the prep room. Like, there is value to come from any person that's been in this line of service for an extended period of time. And it's good to learn from those people as much as, you know, a lot of our industry kind of gives a lot of the blame pointed at each other. The older generation blames the younger, and the younger blames the older.
But
I think there's a lot that can be made in that middle ground, a lot of improvement that can be made somewhere in between as we are, you know, trying to get better. And I love what you said about making connections. This industry is way smaller than you would ever think.
Yeah.
And eventually everyone sort of knows everyone, which is bizarre, especially in your local community. So making those connections and that sort of thing is a good philosophy when you're getting going too.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, I would have never have assumed that I would you know, get, especially like doing this stuff online and talking to you on here and then talking with Elaine from Funeral Boss previously. It's just, like you said,
Oh, you
it's a
have.
small world. Yeah, it's a small world, yet it's a big world, and just something else, you know. And you mentioned like the old schoolers with the families. There's just, it is, it's that, and it's just, they remember a lot of the little things about this that I feel like, you know, we improve upon it, but at the same time, it's just, it's definitely, it's got layers, I guess, if you will.
Yeah, it does. And it's an industry that was built over time, and it's one that has been able to maintain that small business focus, and people want to hold on to that. And I get that. And I appreciate that too, because I come from a, you know, a small business, and it, you know, it's an honor to be like that. And we want to preserve that. So it's finding a way to be able to do that and to be able to give our personal touch to families, but at the same time, grow all together as a collective industry. So that way the public knows, hey, these funeral directors, they're doing something right. That's making that impact that they want to see, because you don't see a lot of those things, a lot of the resistance in other fields to what we do or what we charge. That's usually like the biggest thing that people have issue with, but they won't charge. Right. They won't feel bad about weddings, or they won't feel bad about your prescriptions or your medical bills. And people won't even question it. But for whatever reason, funeral service professionals get questioned to no end about those sort of things. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I think it's good. I think that should go for all industries, because the public is so informed in every aspect of life now. So that's good. But I think it's the perception that we're trying to improve. So that's my long way of saying we need to take our balance from a collective whole, and then keep it that small personal touch to make the biggest impact.
Yeah, that's an excellent way of putting it. It's just that balance between, it's not like the creepy Dracula guy upstairs living upstairs, because I know that still happens, especially in these local funeral homes. Like, you know, there's people living upstairs in the funeral home that's still operating, you know.
Yes. And they come down in their pajamas every night and make sure the bodies haven't moved.
but at the same time, as I'm sure you understand, the weird transition between some of the, you know, the community that is unfortunately passing away, that doesn't realize, you know, when you're making pre-needs and appointments, that the person that answers the phone isn't always going to be the person that lives there. It's going to be the ASD service, and understanding that it's perfectly okay to use ASD. That's just kind of, but it's off-putting. You know, it could be that whole helping people understand that that's just another part of moving into the future. But I mean, I guess they catch on with everything else, like you said, with prescriptions. That's all these automated things we talk to on the phone. But just to maintain, again, the integrity between that, just because you have to talk to that doesn't mean that you're not going to get me showing up to come and help you with what needs to be done.
Yes.
So,
That's where there's a little bit of a disconnect, and we try to help them along. And I think it's because people are so used to funeral directors bending over backwards for generations. And not that we don't now, but we're trying to find a balance where we don't drive ourselves crazy on a day-to-day basis, trying to do a million things, because that's what the need is for a million things to be done. So it's imperative that we lean on each other or lean on different businesses that are in our own industry, just to make ourselves better so we can best serve the families. But people don't really want to hear that sometimes.
And you don't always want to think that, you know, the person that is you want, it's like a lawyer or really a doctor or anything else, not to inflate that, but just that you don't want to think about the person that's taking care of the most, what could be the most like difficult part of your life. also has a child at home or anything else, because it's just, you know, that's a wonderful thing. But at the same time, you know, to what you're saying, like, you don't want that to become people worrying that because a person has a family or other obligations that they won't be able to adequately serve your needs.
Yeah.
So, and you know, you get more women in this service and everything else. And that's probably been one of those things that, like, it's just, it's hard to really talk about, you know, to just say like, I want you to take me seriously, not just because of, you know, women and feminism and things, but also just because it's just because I have children, or we have the so-and-so does or doesn't, it's, you know, like, that's not going to make me, you know, less reliable.
No, of course not. I think it's helped immensely. People knowing that it was only men being funeral directors, like, you're not going to give me any empathy. Like, I think it's helped in that respect, and people understand that anyone can do it, and that's a good thing. And
right.
I think that's all for the best that we're able to do that, so we can best attend to our families. And it's helped us grow, I think, especially in the last five to seven years, there's been a ton of changes. Yeah. And that's going to only continue, and that's all for the better, is end of the day. And I think what women have done in funeral services is making a huge, profound impact, especially with the families that are seeing the result on the other end of things. So right. I think it's gonna catch up as far as the overall, maybe sometimes negative perception is gonna catch up, and everyone's gonna understand, like, these are people that are doing right. good for us.
Right. Or just, yeah, the misguided perception that, yeah, because I can be well-rounded and down to earth, if you will, enough to understand that, you know, that people just worry about how anyone is doing business. So I get it. And although you don't want to look at it that way, but I mean, business is business. And yeah. Right.
So yeah, absolutely. It sure is. Yeah. Well, what are some of the, your favorite things that you've gotten to do in this line of work, or maybe something that you've had to deal with that you know, makes you question, or something that you like to tell your friends and family that you see on a day-to-day basis that maybe is a little bit different.
Yeah. Than what you make. Well, again, I think my favorite thing is probably when I make my way around town not to say you enjoy the things that happen that cause you to have to go around town, right. You know what I mean? But it's, you just learn a lot about the state you live in, honestly. Like, I've traveled more around Wisconsin in the brief amount of time that I've been in funeral service than I have in my entire life. So just going
to all, so well traveled now.
Right. Going to these corners and in this van, you know, you have it in your mind, you're going to be driving this hearse everywhere, this, but that's not what hearse. It is. It's,
no.
It's the big old Pacifica, you know, whatever. So the coroner's offices are always fascinating. Some are a little grittier than others, and
there's no doubt.
Just meeting the people that work there, and just, again, other funeral homes and how some of them are. I remember I went on the north side of Milwaukee and met this funeral director that had been doing it for just years upon years.
Yeah.
So super well-versed guy, if you will.
Yeah.
He was a friend of my original mentor, as I always say.
Nice.
So it was really nice to meet him, but just the super classic big old Jesus, like, reflecting in the corner, which is fine, but I'm just saying, like, just the funeral home itself, it's like a time capsule, you know, and it's just so fun.
Absolutely.
I love seeing that. And then at the other end, there's these ones that are a little more on the corporate side that are just real tight and just new artwork around, but always kind of just the same sort of artwork. So you don't get that far away from hotel, because it's like, oh, I could see that. You could play a game with that. It's like, does that go in a funeral home or in a hotel? You know, it's like
for the newer. Yeah. It's fun to try to balance between the two. That's what we tried to do. But I think when we made reservations. It's about dinner time here in Chicago. So you know what's on my mind. Anyway, when we made renovations, we wanted that fresh, that clean look.
Sure.
Because ours was in rough shape. It hadn't been touched since maybe the 70s, and it needed that overhaul badly. So we did everything.
Like a lot of things in Chicago, right?
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Watch it now, Wisconsin.
I know. And I have to throw one in there. If I don't get it won't be proper.
You had to. Yeah. It's only natural for someone from Wisconsin to hate Illini. It's okay. Talking real Midwest now with my anywhos.
Anywhos and oops.
So we did all the floors, like replaced the carpet that was in the hallways and everywhere. And we did more of that laminate wood style in the halls, and then carpet tiles in the chapel so we could replace them, and new furniture. We try to reupholster some to, but make it look nice and fresh. And we ended up going that route of, I was like, man, maybe we should have like kept a little bit of our uniqueness and heritage a little bit. So we kind of went back to that, and we took out some old pictures and frames and things, and made it about you know, who we are as a firm. And I think that's the best way to make renovations, is keep it true to who your brand, what your brand is. So depending on where you are, like, we're a big time Irish Catholic brand funeral home. Not that we don't serve everyone, of course we do, but that's who we serve. So sure. We double down on that, and we say, you know, we show all that, and like my great grandfather come from Ireland and starting a funeral home, things like that. But I think there's you got to find that balance where you want it to look clean and crisp, and you don't want it to look like there could be cobwebs maybe like up in the rafters.
It's at the same time, I think sometimes that some of the people that come in there are comforted by that in some ways.
Yeah,
that's what they remember.
Right.
You know, the years, because I'm sure you see people too that come in and they're like, I was here. What I have been here, a while. Yeah. I was here 2 years. I don't really want to be here. And then you got to do the, yeah, I know, right?
Sorry, like, we're trying to make it look nice for you.
So
mean of us.
And so funny you might mention Irish Catholic. That's pretty much exactly, yeah, I'm sure it's probably a very Midwest thing in general, but that's very similar to where I work as well. So, and I was going to say too, that's interesting that I've learned more about the Catholic, just the different ways of doing all the rites and the way you do Catholic funerals. And that's been a pretty fascinating experience in itself, whether you're religious or spiritual or not. It's just super interesting to learn everything that goes into that.
Yeah. Tell me about that experience, because it is very specific. Like most funeral directors, if you've ever done a Catholic service, it is very, every step of the way there is a thing that has to happen, and it's less like some other religions where it's a little more up for interpretation. Like Catholic, especially like the funeral mass and everything, it's, you have to be on your toes and you have to do things the right way, because your role there is very sacred. And on the other end, you're putting on a little bit of a performance sometimes, because you're the center stage for several different aspects. What was it like learning all that for you? And what are some of those things that still give you the shakes?
Right. Yeah, it definitely was. It's just, it definitely makes you feel like you're going backwards in age a little bit. Just you're stepping into the position of, like you said, putting on a little bit of a performance, and very nerve wracking at first, because God forbid, anytime you're doing a service, you want to look like you're doing the family justice, but at the same time, you're not in your house, as we put it, we're in someone else's house.
Correct.
So you're there to do what the family would like.
You're in God's house, baby.
Right. That makes you feel, you know, like that makes the family feel like you're connected to, you know, you're doing their loved one justice.
Yeah.
I think learning to fold the pall was like interesting. I feel like I got a rhythm with it now. I feel pretty good about it. But at first that was, and I think it is, maybe you can concur, I think it comes with the priest, you know, and who you're working with too, because some of them are real stiff about everything they do, and other ones are a little bit like, yeah, we get it. People are coming and going in this profession just like we are now. So
they're
a little more understanding. So
it varies on the priest a lot.
Yeah.
And probably your other funeral director. Like if you have an old school one, they're going to have a very specific way. Like when I go on a funeral with my dad, I am the one that is leading us in and leading us out. I'm never the one pushing. I'm always the one in front holding. And then when we're folding the pall, I'm always grabbing with my left hand, and like, it's all orchestrated exactly how it needs to be. But that's something that if you're doing those type of services, and it doesn't matter if it's Catholic or anything else, it's good to practice that stuff at the funeral home prior too. So you when you're going into it, you don't crumble under the pressure, because pressure, like doing all that stuff or saying prayers at an end of service or sort of announcement and things like that. It takes practice. That's a whole big part of our job. We do so many jobs and public speaking and acting are some of the
right. Just knowing when to step up there, you go from being a person in the background to being the one that wants to guide. And that was always a funny transition between being the director and then being, you know, knowing when to kind of step back and that's their moment to be alone. And
it's a great point. It's pretty much never in the middle. It's either you're being the center of attention or you're a fly on the wall and you're not even there. And you go back and forth between those two because you want the families to know that you're there for them, but you don't want to be intrusive. So you step away and make sure that they have their time with their family, their friends. There's no kind of middle ground on that. It's one or the other, and it happens at different times, and you have to know, okay, this is my time to step up to the plate and take some action, or this is my time to step back and let the family do their thing right here.
For sure. And as far as shakes go, I'd say probably doing the gifts, like bringing forward the communion table and the ushering process, because it's pretty self-explanatory. But at the same time, again, with a certain priest, sometimes they're on one side or the other, and then sometimes they're kind of just in the middle, and you know what side you always go to first to usher. Yes. But at the same time, it just doesn't always work that way. Sometimes they have them go around the outside and come up, and you're just like, okay, you know, just gonna try to throw it together. But thankfully, during those times of like movement within the church, it feels like there's a little more, you know, all eyes aren't so fixated on you like they
That's
can
true.
Be. So.
That's true. And, you know, the overall structure is the same for every mass. So you get an idea of when it's time to go up there, like when communion is finishing up, we know, okay, we go back, we come up the sides, and those funeral directors, everyone else is like, oh, where did they come from? They weren't standing up here the whole time. They were probably in the back, like just like we always are, you know. Yeah. But then you speak up and it's like, oh, and then here comes the incense. It's like, oh, it must be go time. Funeral director's coming up, the incense. It must be like time for the cemetery.
Right, exactly. It is. It's very much like that. Now, when you talk about what makes me nervous, I'd say probably military honors. That one really gets me. You know, if you want to go a whole other direction.
No, I would love to. What makes you so nervous?
Those guys can be all over the place.
No, I love that. Why is that the most nerve-wracking for you?
I think it's just because there's many different branches of military. So you never know if you're going to get the Navy or you know, from the arrangement folder, but I mean, it's always usually like the same few guys are going to do the shots. And but then depending on what branch it is, and you got the flag folding and everything, it's just sometimes they're a little older, a little younger. Sometimes they're kind of chatting in the back when you have the family in another room, and you got to kind of make sure you have everybody in their places so nobody's kind of disturbing one another. And they're great. They're always great. Like, it's fun how, you know, you start recognizing the same people showing up to do those sort of things, different personalities. And I think it's cool, like the gunpowder and families are always so moved by that, you know.
Absolutely.
And the handing the flag, and it's
a moment to be tear jerker.
Absolutely. So it's always a powerful moment to be part of that, and makes me feel special. So
it is. It is super powerful. You don't know really what you're gonna get when they come out, you know, sometimes. Yeah. And the nerve-wracking part is like, I want to make they're coming, right? They're always early. They're always early. Don't get me wrong on that. But it's like, you're not getting multiple confirmations or like you would maybe with some other things that you're ordering, or
it's not
as frequent. So you don't have that, like, oh, I know my florist, I guarantee they're going to come with the spray.
Yeah.
There's no doubt. The military honors, like, they're please, you ordered.
Yes, I really hope they're
right
here.
Like,
yeah.
Everyone talks about it, like, you got military honors, right? Right, right.
Yeah, yep. You're right. You're absolutely right. There are always directors making sure that someone got that, and did you know, make sure the secretary left a message about it. And I think making room, that sounds kind of silly, but depending on the size of, especially when we have it at the funeral home,
okay,
it's like you want to make sure those flowers are pushed back because these guys are going to do that flag folding. You got like that tight little area, and I'm just always terrified we're going to knock over a plant or a photo board or whatever it's going to be. So,
oh, they could probably do it in a 2-foot by 2-foot room, yeah, and just to figure
well,
it out.
Well, and their face doesn't change, so that's the thing. So you got to maintain like the fact that they're keeping their composure, and you're just like,
I guess I must.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So. Yeah, that's a very fair point. How is it being a mom, apprentice, being in school? How do you balance all those things? That's got to be so hard.
Well, it's whenever people say that, it's always kind of like, it's a weird feeling because I feel like no matter what job I've ever had in life, I've been balancing those things, you know?
Yeah.
I love my kids. My kids are, but I have a 14-year-old and a 7-year-old. So it's a pretty wide range.
Yeah.
They're not in diapers though, which makes things a little bit easier, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm thankful that I am very lucky, blessed, I guess. I have help, you know, and my husband's a very helpful man. He takes care of what needs to be done and when I'm not there. And
yeah,
I think it's nice. More, I outsource myself mostly, like when I'm not at work, to the ones around me. So I think overall, and not to sound like it's about me, but I think it's trying to remember to do something for myself,
yeah,
whether it be getting sleep or just seeing my friends. Like I feel like, you know, I don't really see my own personal friends and things like that, but it's just, I keep telling myself when I get school kind of out of the way there, then things will open up a little bit more.
Yeah.
So
you got to make a conscious effort for that stuff. And a hard thing to do as a funeral director, to make the effort to be with your friends or with your family, have some alone time or some time for you, whatever that means, whether it's just sitting back or taking a bath,
yeah,
or exercising or
right,
doing another hobby, like trying to find that balance and be like, I need this stuff or I need time with my friends. It's not an easy thing to do, but it has to be a priority so you don't start resenting your day-to-day work. Like for me, I'm always like, I love traveling. And I was like, I know funeral directors that everyone gets pissed when I say that. And I like to travel a lot and I'm very fortunate that I get to do it. And it's because I spend my free time, like anytime I can possibly get, I'm like, I'm going to go and travel so I can experience. Like I love like
right,
having the experience of more, but that's different for everyone. So making that, whatever it is for you, having that be a priority and a non-negotiable is super important.
Yeah. It's whenever I, you know, again, this being my second interview, I've kind of sat down and talked to somebody. It's to sit and try to, you know, I kind of psyched myself out a little bit before this thinking like, I don't really ever know what to offer up when people ask me like, okay, what is it like doing this?
Cause
you know what you're thinking and other people are thinking when it comes to this industry and all the things we know.
What
underneath
a flow.
But yeah. What am I going to talk about that's good for public discussion?
No, I mean, that's what we want. Like we're all funeral directors. Like we
right,
like to get into the nastiness and
sure,
the tough side, and there's a beautiful side and all that stuff. And it's just
yeah,
part of what our job is. Do you do any prep room side of things, or are you mostly
yeah,
with the families? How do you like
yeah,
that? What's the nastiest thing you've ever seen?
Well, I will, when this is all said and done and I get my almighty license, it will be a dual license. So I will be dual licensed as a embalmer.
It's
director.
So Wisconsin that you have to get two licenses.
It is. So, and isn't that funny? I think it's like in the UK, you don't even need like a certain, it's totally different. Like
it's different yeah, every state and every country. And
it's wild.
It's
wild.
A nuisance. Yeah.
I will say that Wisconsin, I feel like is they really just, they I feel like they really pulled a collar on you a little bit. Like
yeah,
I get it, but at the same time, you know, the need is strong and you gotta yeah, think that some people just pull out after a while just because of just how time consuming
oh,
getting
yeah,
there is, like with the schooling and everything. I mean
yep,
but anyway, the prep room, Well, I'll say the
most interesting. Don't be shy now. Don't be shy. No, I'm just another more Christian. I live in the prep room. Come on.
I had to give this one. I'd have to say the first job I had when I was doing my introduction into the world of funeral directing. I'd spent a lot more time in a crematory, it sounds weird, but I actually kind of miss it. With my current position, I do a lot more burials and traditionals. Okay. So previously was really heavy on the crematory, but
it's a love hate in there.
Yeah. It's sometimes it's just your little haven, you know, as weird as that sounds, but
that's what I think about the prep room.
Yeah. So, and I work with a few people that feel that way too. Right.
Sometimes.
So I have to say one of the weirdest / grossest, just bizarre, was probably this lady. She lost her boyfriend. Now they're older. When I say boyfriend, I just want to make sure we understand there were adults, fully grown adults.
Got it. Check.
And he had the grill plate on his teeth. Like he had the metal plating.
Sure.
The gold plating, as they claimed it was, right?
Grills. Well,
right, exactly. So, you know, you're familiar with how the crematory works when a body is, you know, the process happens.
Out comes the grill.
And there's metal left behind. You know, you can, some places, I don't know, it's kind of like this weird mystery thing underneath. Some places talk about it with other people. Some people don't. I know that place would make sure the family knew that if they wanted the metal, like let's say there was a metal rod in their legs, their arm, whatever it might be, you have screws that you had your hips replaced, whatever. You can actually ask for that metal back. Like people want, what are they going to do with it? I have no idea, but you can do that. Well, this gal, she wanted his grills back. She wanted that plate off his teeth. So when my coworker, who was at the time, I believe was my manager, when he entered the room to do the removal, she was there trying to remove them.
Oh my god.
Yes. And I mean he's gone, so it's just, and that's her loved one, so whatever, that's between you and him. But long story short, they still wanted that back, and yeah, so they did get it back, let's put it that way, before the process. I'm gonna go ahead and say that I'm pretty sure that wasn't gold, but that's what happened. Yeah.
Well, maybe they did have to get it out before, like, there is a 50-50 shot if this thing's melting in here. I think we got to get it out.
I want it off. I want it off his teeth. I want it back. It's mine. I want that gold.
Oh, that's so funny. It's so funny.
Welcome to the Midwest.
Absolutely fantastic. Sam, it's been great getting to talk to you. What a fun episode. And hopefully you keep it rocking and rolling with your apprenticeship and school and being a mom and having fun.
I appreciate that.
And then it'll all calm down and it's going to be easy.
Okay. Yeah, I hope so. It was so nice talking to you. I mean, and my coworkers are going to be like, I got to do it with that guy, you know, the one guy that climbed in the casket on the episode. We were all laughing and giggling at him because he's just so cute and entertaining. And they're like, Sure.
That's a mortuary show. We're not going further into that.
All right.